Now I'd like to introduce to you Jeremy Pruitt, the head football coach of the Tennessee Football Volunteers.
My vision for our football team is we want to be a big, fast, dominating, aggressive, relentless football team that nobody in the SEC wants to play. That's my goal.
The Tennessee Volunteers are coming off a 20-10 victory over Mississippi State. Dan Harrelson here alongside Coach Rush Probst. Coach, what are your thoughts on this win? It was a must-win situation, I thought, for Jeremy Pruitt and this program. If they want to search for that bowl game to become bowl eligible, the second half of the season here needing four more wins. What are your thoughts on this performance, 20-10 Tennessee?
Good win. I really do. I thought it was a positive win. And where much improvement was in the interior line, both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively, that I thought they controlled the line of scrimmage, number one, first and foremost. And then I was, if you don't turn it over a couple of times, that'd probably extend the lead, like we talked about, even more before we went on the air. I think they win the game going away. So, but it was a good win. It had to feel good. It's got to be a better feeling in the locker room. Got to be a better feeling in attitude. And when you work as hard as they're working, the coaching staff, you got to see some positive every once in a while. And I think that was a positive win. And I think it will. And I know it's on the heels of Alabama. I get all that. But could you imagine coming to Alabama off a loss? Regardless of what you think, whether Tennessee has a chance to win or not, I think anybody steps on the field has a chance. I can tell you this, Jeremy will have a good plan. He'll have the best plan he can have defensively to give Alabama a lot of things that maybe they have not seen defensively that can maybe slow down the offense a little bit. And who knows, you come in there and you turn it over three or four times and Alabama can control – Tennessee can control the line of scrimmage offensively and run the football and do some things to keep it away from them, and then it gets tight. All you want is a chance going into the fourth quarter. That's all you want. I say if Tennessee's down 10, 7, or up going into the fourth quarter, that's all you can ask for. Just give yourself a chance.
And you look at the two games last season, 2018, that Alabama did struggle in, Georgia in the SEC championship game, and then the national championship, of course, against the Clemson Tigers. Clemson came out and beat them up pretty good. But Tua, the situations that he's been in, he got bailed out by Jalen Hurts in Atlanta in the SEC championship game against Georgia. But defensive line play, that he doesn't go against it each week, and that's why he's putting up these stats he is. But when he does go up against the defensive line that's causing a little bit of havoc, it gets him out of his rhythm. Do you think Tennessee with Daryl Taylor and some of these other guys, of course, there's still not a lot of depth there, but do you think that can make things a little bit interesting against Tua?
At times during the year, I don't think Alabama's been happy with their run game, which forces you to be – the biggest thing that Alabama's done is the RPO game and getting the ball to those receivers in space, and when they do, they're so fast and athletic. Obviously, Jeremy said in his press conference today, it makes it awfully tough. So I just think somehow, some way, you got to make Tua uncomfortable. How is that? Number one, you got to take away the run, and you have to commit to that, or they'll Najee Harrison and Robertson Kidd will run through you now. And you don't want them to be able to run the football, because if they can run the football, it makes the throw game and the RPO game even tougher to defend. But I think Jeremy is a very intelligent, very schematic, brilliant guy that when you put him on the board and put him in playing room, I think he'll have a great plan. And I really believe it'll be the best plan that Alabama's seen. Now, can they match him athlete for athlete? Well, obviously they can't. I mean, I don't think Tennessee's secondary is capable of holding up long term to anybody. I don't think just Tennessee. I don't think anybody's secondary can hold up long term to Alabama's receivers. The question is going to be, as you just see it, defensive linemen winning the battle in the trenches, stopping the run, and putting and getting Tua off his mark, and then obviously you got to blitz him some, like Georgia did in the SEC championship. But I think with Jeremy's contacts with Kirby, going back studying that game, and I know Alabama knows it, but Jeremy will spend a lot of time, and he probably already has. I know he has looking at the Clemson and the Georgia film. And coming up with ideas based on what his team can do, based not what Georgia as much could do. He's got to figure out what his team can do, and that's the key matchup, is what Tennessee players can do to be effective and getting Tua uncomfortable. That's the key that nobody's been able to do.
And something that we've discussed way back, I guess, going back to the after that first game, the loss at Georgia or against Georgia State, about T. Martin being in the booth, sitting side by side with Jim Chaney, and kind of how we saw that maybe as something that's just not working one game into this season communication wise. And we see T go to the sideline, headset on, and he's helping out more of a rotation with these receivers. And yeah. I mean, we know that Mississippi State's not the caliber opponent that some of these wins are going to have to be down the stretch for Tennessee, but I think it was a good move to start now to have a guy like T. Martin down there for communication.
There's no question. I think that's where T's strength's going to be, in my opinion. I mean, I thought it crowded Jim in the box. I really did, because Jim's a very brilliant guy. Didn't really need that. Where T's going to be really good is communication on the sideline and rotation of players. I think when Jeremy saw the play chart of how many plays were being played, he knew that the kids on the field wasn't getting rotated. And when you have a receiver that's playing 65, as he said in his press conference, 65 plus snaps, you know, they're going to wear down. I don't care who they are. They're going to wear down. Alabama's receivers don't play that much. You know, you want your receivers, knowing the spread and being around the spread as much as I have over the years, I don't want my wide receivers playing more than about 50 snaps. I'd rather be in the mid-40s, to be honest with you. So, you know, that's where you twos have got to come in, and they've just got to play. And you say, well, they're not as good as Jennings and Callaway, but it don't matter. Jennings and number one, they're not as good when they're running 65 to 70 snaps a week. They're going to wear like a dang racehorse that races every week. They're going to wear down. So, I think some of them big-time receivers, you got to sort of protect them when you can, and I think that and they'll be more elite for you, and they're elite for a reason. But if you wear on them too much, then they won't be as effective. So I thought that was a heck of a move out of Jeremy, just being smart and making an adjustment during the season that can help his football team be better.
Looking at the SEC East right now, I mean, you got Florida went down to LSU, got a loss there. South Carolina upset Georgia in Athens. Missouri sitting there undefeated in the East in conference play. There's a chance they can make some noise. I mean, they could beat Florida and still lose to Georgia and win out and have that tiebreaker. Looking at the SEC East, what's your thoughts? Do you think this is Florida's to lose at this point? Do you think Georgia still has it? Can Missouri and Derek Dooley do something?
I think Missouri can. I don't know whether they've lost a really good defensive player. One of their better players. Don't know if he's out for the year or if he's, you know, I just heard a blip on it over the weekend. But I know when you go down in this stiff play and they still got Florida and Georgia ahead of them, you know, you got to have all your guns. And you know, I know they've got Georgia and Athens. Where do they play Florida?
That would be in Jacksonville, Florida, Georgia.
No, I'm talking about Missouri.
Missouri, I believe that one is in Gainesville.
So they both tough ball games on the road. I still think Missouri is talented enough to give people a run. But I don't think it's Florida's to win. I think Florida's playing extremely hard. I tell you what I've been impressed with Florida is how hard they do play. And, man, I tell you now, they are – they come and play with a lot of passion and a lot of heart and desire. And I think that I didn't see that with Georgia on Saturday. And, you know, they just played lackadaisical and you know, and got beat. And you can't do that and compete for a national championship. And you just can't do it. So, but I think that Georgia's really talented. They got a heck of a quarterback. And I still believe in quarterback play. If Georgia can shake off this loss, move forward, I still think it's Georgia's to lose. I think Georgia wins out and wins the East. I still say.
Actually, that one's in Columbia. Florida's at Missouri, November 16th, right before that Florida State game.
Right. So that could play into it. But I just think Georgia wins out. You know, I think they win the East, and I think that this loss will go away. You know, to me, Georgia has some tough games, but, you know, in November. But the one to me is that run of, you know, they got Auburn, they got Missouri, and then Auburn, and then Texas A&M. So, if based on Texas A&M getting on a run, and because they got LSU at the end, so if A&M gets on a run here and wins here on out and gets some momentum, coming to Athens will be a big one. And then, obviously, you're looking at Missouri. That's a talented team. And then they've got to go to Auburn. I think Georgia's got a tough road ahead of them, but I still believe they're talented enough, and they do have a quarterback. The key to it is having a quarterback. And I think when you say that, we've seen the issues with Tennessee. You look at the best quarterbacks in the SEC, the kid at LSU, Tua, and Fromm are the three elite kids. But, you know, Kelly Bryant's not too far off. And, you know, we'll see if somebody else steps up. But Bo Nix is still a freshman. But I still think when it boils down to it, quarterback play dictates. Quarterback play, in my opinion, and D-line play will dictate most championships.
Yeah, still a lot of football to be played and a lot of football for Jeremy at Tennessee. You think Brian Maurer is a guy, true freshman quarterback, that shown a little bit of promise, still a young guy, still a little bit anxious. We saw that against Mississippi State there. But you think he's good enough to win four ball games down the stretch? Obviously, got Alabama this week. We kind of know how that's going to go. But then there is a series of games where they could probably navigate to four games. I think after Alabama, it's the toughest game is probably either hosting South Carolina, which will be a 4 o'clock kick, after the Alabama game, and then Missouri on the road late in November. So you think it's manageable?
I do. I think there's a lot of hope that Tennessee finishes 6-6. I think they beat Vanderbilt. I think they. You know, I think UAB's, you know, they can beat them. You know, they're obviously the talent level. Now, I think UAB's a really good football team, and I know they're well coached. I mean, they're very well coached, probably one of the best coached teams in the country, in my opinion. I think Bill Clark's an outstanding football coach. Missouri out there is going to be tough to win, but I think take Missouri out, to me, here's how it's going to roll. Missouri's probably going to be a favorite. South Carolina, Tennessee, based on what happened this weekend, it could be a pick 'em, or South Carolina won't be much, 2-point favorite at best. I think that's a flip of the coin game. I think UAB's going to be a tight ball game. And to me, they beat Vanderbilt and Kentucky. I know Kentucky is on the road, but I just think Tennessee is a better football team right now than – I thought Kentucky won a big game on Saturday night, but I still think that Tennessee is better than Kentucky. They're better than Vanderbilt. And probably talent-wise, they're better than Tennessee, than UAB, but I still think UAB is capable of beating them if they don't come to play. So when you look at it, South Carolina's a flip game, so Missouri's really the game. You know, outside of Alabama, Missouri's the only game really – you go in there, and it's not a game you can't win. You go in there and control the line of scrimmage. It's all about line of scrimmage and quarterback play, but I do think quarterback's a guy. Now, the good thing about Jerry is you got him in the background. He can play. He's got a lot of experience. He can come in and do things. It's not like you don't have a second quarterback. Some of these teams don't have a second quarterback. I'll be honest with you. They just don't.
Yeah, I thought Jarrett played really well. I mean, he didn't – he wasn't asked to do too much when he came in, but his composure after being benched, that you got to like that, to just to have a guy that could come in and still have some respect from his teammates too.
I thought he handled it extremely well. I mean, you know, anybody looked at what Jared Hurt has done in his career at Alabama, how you handle yourself. I hope everybody's looked at that as players and followed suit, because in this day and age, sometimes we don't see a lot of that. And you know, so it's good for him. But I was real proud of Jared. I thought he handled himself very well. And then obviously when he comes in, players are going to respect him, and then they still believe in you because you believe in them. So it's all about the team. At the end of the day, it's about the team. It's not about your playing time. It's about the team. So I know that's a hard thing to say in today's world, but it really is. It's what it's about.
We're going to hit a break here and come back and talk more football. Liberty head coach Hugh Freeze joins the show. Coach, thank you for taking a few minutes. 4-2 on the season so far. Four-game winning streak. Just kind of talk about the progress of building this program first year in at Liberty.
Well, I think, you know, you have to divide it up into building a program certainly takes, you know, longer than 1 year. But, man, to be sitting at four wins in year one of FBS, you know, this is our first full season as FBS team, and to be sitting here at four wins at the midpoint through the season, you know, I think I'm pleased with what that shows. Are there areas we can get better at? Of course. You know, depth is a little bit of an issue, and we our open week came at a great time for us to get somewhat healthy for the remaining six games, but and we got some tough ones on schedule. But you know, I'm excited about being, you know, at a place like Liberty that I think has special people and special facilities and a special vision to you know, build this into one of the top group of five schools in the nation. And I'm more convinced than ever that can happen.
Yeah, and it's a unique place because it's an independent school, and you're at the FBS level. It's kind of like a school like BYU, who's an independent now, and I think Liberty can really be something down the road. And I know you had a lot of opportunities this past offseason as a coordinator at certain places, Tennessee won, and I think it's just good for you to be a head coach right now to go that route, to be in position, especially at a place like Liberty.
Well, you know, obviously I'm thankful for any opportunity that I might have had, but to me it's just a whole different deal for me at this age of my life. I want to be a head coach, and you know, I've done that now for years, and you know, Liberty was the one that afforded me that opportunity, and you know, I'm thankful for it and really excited about what we can do here.
At Liberty, are you running pretty much the same type of offense that you have ran at previous stops? I've watched a few of your coaching videos, and that three-man surface kind of really stuck out to me. Just a scheme to find those one-on-one matchups and creating conflict. Is that some of the same type of stuff that you're running there at Liberty?
Yeah, I will never change what we do offensively. I don't know anything but what we've done, and it's had success everywhere we've been. So I just, you know, it's what I'm familiar with and what I feel comfortable calling the game with. So we're doing the same stuff.
Well, talk about your coaching staff. Have you brought anybody that you previously coached with on board at Liberty, or did you just kind of have to build the staff with new pieces there this year?
Yeah, it was a mixture. Offensively, it's all guys that have been with me or either played for me. And then defensively, I went to the Division II ranks primarily and got guys that I thought, you know, I think some of the best coaching happens at some of the lower levels of football. And, you know, hired Scott Simons and basically his staff that was at West Georgia 2 years ago that did some really, really good stuff, and I couldn't be more pleased with the improvements that Liberty's shown on defense this year under them. And so it's kind of a mixture. I got a lot of my former players on and off the field roles, and then offensively it's guys that have been around me or that knew of me and knew of our stuff. The only one offensively that probably hadn't was Ken Austin, who I think is one of the best you know, brightest minds in football and a great quarterback coach.
Well, you being a part of a program that is independent, and of course scheduling kind of takes years in advance when you piece together a football schedule, but being an independent, you kind of get to make that own schedule. Have you started looking at that, and are you in favor of that? Do you like that to kind of navigate your way of who you want to play, and or is it just a top deal where anything available you'll take?
Yeah, I think that is a challenge. They've done a nice job with that. You know, for this year, the next few years is a little more challenging than I would like in the early stages of our building here. But it is what it is, and you've got to, you know, it'll be exciting atmosphere. So we kind of use that in recruiting that, you know, we tell our kids we're not, you know, that we're recruiting. We're not hindered by any kind of conference schedule, and we get the opportunity to go play in some arenas that are quite fun and that they will enjoy playing in. And at the end of the day, truthfully, there's a lot of most kids that we're recruiting, they couldn't tell you who were conference champions last year outside maybe the Power Five to begin with. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so we're all playing for the same thing. And that's, I mean, realistically, there's only 6 to 8 teams that can win the national championship in the current format. And the rest of us are playing for bowl games. And so we kind of use that in recruiting to say, look, you know, we not only get to do that, but we get to play in whatever arena we choose to play in because we're independent.
And a couple more things, Coach. I know you got to hit the practice field in just a couple minutes, but just wanted to ask you about Jerry Falwell Jr. I think he's got a great vision for this program. And David Nasser, he serves as Liberty's pastor and senior vice president for spiritual development, somebody you're close with. I just think that's two key components for that school and for this program.
Yeah, you know, President Falwell's vision for this place really amazes me. The vision he had for this university and now for his football program, he wants to compete now. He loves to compete, and he wants you to do it at a high level, but he's very supportive of that, and so I'm really thankful for his leadership and him, you know, giving me this opportunity, and along with Ian McCall, who I think is an outstanding human being and a wonderful AD. And then David Nasser, man, the job he does with the students on this campus as far as the spiritual leadership, I've just been amazed by, and consider him a dear, dear friend. And we spend a lot of times chatting about just life or issues that come up, but he is he's just one heck of a guy.
Well, Coach Freeze, thank you for taking a few minutes. Like I said, you got to hit the practice field, but thank you for coming on. It's good to catch up, and it's also good to see you back in college football.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very blessed.
All right, thank you. Air Force head football coach Troy Calhoun joins the show. Dan Harrelson here alongside Coach Rush Probst. Coach Calhoun, thank you for taking a few minutes coming on the show. You're one of my favorite coaches at the Air Force Academy. I've known you for quite some time now, but thank you for coming on the show.
I really appreciate it, Dan, and sure admire and respect the quality of work that you've always done. So thanks for having me.
Well, just talk about the season so far. You already played Navy this year. That was a tough fought game, as we would expect that caliber opponent playing Navy. San Jose State had a pretty good win there. That's a team that beat Arkansas. And a hard-fought game against Boise, and you got a win at Colorado. Just kind of taking a look at the whole season right now, what's your thoughts on your team?
Yeah, you know, Dan, I mean, we're going to be in a bunch of close ones. We have been thus far, and I think that'll be the case pretty much each week from here on out. So if you want to test your heart a little bit, we're going to make sure that occurs here over the next 6 weeks or so.
Well, Coach Probst, have you been able to keep in touch with any Air Force football this season? Of course, you first time that you've had a season where you can kind of sit back and take in quite a few different programs and games to kind of get a feel for each type of offense out there in college football.
Well, you know, it is different with all the new stuff and people, or let's just say the media puts out, you know, all this new stuff. I'm not sure it's a lot of new stuff. I mean, everybody's hot and heavy on these RPO games and all that stuff. And I guess Coach Calhoun, I've always had great respect for your program and all the military academies. I've had right at 10 kids, somewhere between 9 or 10 kids that have played at the academies over the last 21 years. And the last one I had at the Air Force Academy was back in the late 80s, early 90s. So it's been a while, Coach, that I've had one there. But offensively, I guess, have you been able to, with the style of offense that you run, let's talk about RPOs and how do you work the RPO game, or do you work the RPO game in what you do offensively?
You know, Coach, it kind of depends season by season. There have been certain years where we have and done it pretty significantly. And I do, you know, what we do hold in terms of at least our foundation, now your personnel changes from year to year, and I think you got to match your personnel. We believe that even here at the Air Force Academy. It's not that we don't have a system, but just when it comes to getting ready to put a new, each crew's different. Some year you have a couple more receivers. Other years, maybe you can run a little bit better on the inside. And but I do think inevitably in the sport of football, you better be able to block well. You better be able to play a block defensively. And I think when you do, when you are able to run the ball well, then the play action part of it, that complement must be there. And I do think in the sport, certainly in this century, you have to be able to throw it well and you have to be able to run it well. And I do not think you can be solely a one-dimensional team. I don't know if that completely answers, at least in terms of what you brought forth in terms of the RPO aspect of it, but that's our approach.
Well, you know, I grew up and played in high school football in the 70s in Alabama, and obviously it seemed like you didn't run the wishbone. You were sort of you were criticized and sort of ostracized, you know, if you didn't run that. But, you know, and it takes a lot of discipline, you know, to run a triple, and you see people that still, you know, hang their hat on it to a certain extent. But, Coach, and I've always said this about you, and I just know, you know, you've recruited my players. You would be successful anywhere you went, whether it would be at an SEC school or to Air Force Academy or on the Pac-12. It doesn't matter. A coach is a coach. And I've said this on this show before, and I'll say it again, and I think coaching is coaching. It don't matter what level you are. If you can coach, then obviously you can do it at any level. And I think with you, that's always what I've seen with you. I think you would be successful because you have you're versatile. And I think that's the thing that sets aside certain coaches. Dan, you and I have talked about the versatility of a football coach. And it goes back to, let's just take the number one team in the country right now, Alabama. Coach Saban is not doing near what he did 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And it's based on he has a quarterback that can do what he does. He's thrown it all over the yard, and I think if you'd have said that 5 years ago, people thought you were on some type of drug. But you know, but I think people in our careers, I think you go through periods of change based on what you just said, your personnel, and I think you said that a while ago. So personnel dictates basically what you do offensively. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Coach, I mean, and the game changes. You know, as it evolves, there are different things that you teach. I mean, technique-wise, there are different ways that you articulate to your players. And there are different things, both skill and power, that come into play with various players. Now, ultimately, you still got to be great at the fundamentals. I think those will be, that's going to forever be the case, you know, in terms of the sport of football and being really, really disciplined. And yet you better be able to adapt, and you better be able to, you know, we say at the Air Force Academy in day one of basic training that flexibility is the key to air power. Well, it is in the sport of football, too.
Yeah, it is. And I guess changing gears a second, and this is a hot topic, and I know, but I'm curious to know your, regardless of what you run offensively, what the hot topic to me is, what I've noticed being not coaching this fall and watching a lot of football, I have noticed how tackling seems like to be a lost art. And I'm not being too critical, but I'm somewhat being critical that tackling, teams are not tackling as well as they used to. Do you think is the targeting rule, and what's your thought on the targeting rule with football, and have we gone overboard with it, or is it something we're going to have to adapt? And I mean, I know we're going to have to adapt. Obviously, the rules are going to continue to change, but do you think that's the reason our tackling has gotten worse?
You know, perhaps. I think one thing, I do think the game's played so much more in the open field, where you're going to be exposed a little bit if you don't have tremendous feet as a tackler. And it's not in the phone booth, per se, you know, where a guy's got a chance to make somebody miss in the open field. I think the other part of it, too, is maybe you just don't quite have as much true physical contact in the sport than maybe what you did, say, 30 years ago. That might be good or that might not be. I think probably depending on your perspective in that regard. And then in regards to the targeting, I think the biggest thing we want to do with targeting is I think it has to be the one where everybody in the stadium knows that was really bad. There's a punt returner that some guy clearly launched and hit him in the helmet. I just don't think targeting ought to ever be a factor when it involves the ball carrier. And I say that from the standpoint you are protected, your feet are on the ground. I think to be able to adequately tackle, your eyes have to be up. You do have to use your chin, and you do have to be able to come out of your hips. And I think there's a blatant difference between the two. And I think there are times, quite honestly, on tackles, probably at least 80% of the tackles where there is a helmet hits another helmet. That's just the reality of the sport. And it doesn't mean we've compromised any kind of player safety as long as our eyes are up, as long as we're wearing a mouthpiece, as long as we got the right amount of air in our helmet. And then the other part, too, is I think you have to practice physical football. You have to practice tackling to be good at it. You have to practice blocking. I mean, those are things you have to do. And ultimately, that's for the safety of the kid, too, by doing it.
You know, I know you do this some type of something, but one thing, I've been to a lot of places this fall. I've probably been to 12 different universities and probably 10 different high school programs across Southeast, and have watched practice and see how people do things and, you know, to look and see, you know. But one thing I have noticed is that the good programs, people that are really good at tackling or really good at physicality, they start practice every day. It made me feel good because every day at practice, period one for us was a one-on-one inside of a dummy with a ball carrier, just an old, whether it was Bucks drill, Packer drill, whether it was Falcon drill, whatever. And then you go right into that to tackling, where the receivers tackle the DBs, the running backs and linebackers, you know, and those kinds of things. And to me, the better teams, that's something that's really put a lot of emphasis on it. And I think some of the teams that I've noticed, maybe not as good are tacklers, they don't work on it near as much. And I'm not going to be critical of the ones that I saw that did not tackle as much in practice that don't tackle in the ball game. But you've got to work on tackling. And I think that the one thing I said here, and I'm actually nearly can see it sitting on this balcony, is that Andrews Institute over here, Dr. James Andrews, is a friend of mine. Dr. Lyle King's a real good friend of mine, covered my teams at Hoover, and I've talked to him about this. The one thing they're seeing, and they're obviously got all the data, is I think now that you're seeing more lower body extremity injuries because of how now players are launching and hitting people in the knees and in the lower body part. And so the ACL used to be a plant-only injury or a roll-up from an offensive lineman sometimes, but now you're starting to see the hits come and launch them to a player because they want to keep their headgear away from the headgear of the player. So their target becomes lower, and there's just as many injuries coming to that as there are more now, the data says, than it has been in the past.
I think no doubt. You know, you think of something, if you're a trap corner and you're playing a stick route to the field, you know, and number two and number three breaking out, golly, I mean, you know that if you go hit that guy near the shoulders, they could call you for targeting, you know, right as he makes the catch or the ball's near his hands or, you know, or, and yet at the same time, you know, you're protected by, I don't want to say knifing him, but that's what you're doing. You know, you can use whatever that phrase may be to hit a lower target just so there's no chance where you can get called for a penalty. I think the other part, too, is you got to wear pads. I think the less you wear pads, the higher you tend to be, which I think affects the way you tackle. I do think when you're in full pads and you have a good bit of full contact work, you do learn how to bend your knees and keep your feet hot rather than having your feet stuck in the ground or start to twist and torque. And, golly, you got to have a way where a kid learns the value of what he does when he's got his knee pads and especially his thigh pads. And he's got to have his feet up underneath him to play the game.
Are you guys also player safety wise? Do you guys like the new rule where you can on returns you can fair catch it on a kick return and maybe inside the 10-yard line or whatnot and get fair catch it and then take it back to the 25? Do you guys like that?
I probably do, Dan. I don't know initially if I felt that way, but I do think the impact, because what is different from 15 or 20 years ago? The bodies that are involved are bigger and they are faster. it's physics 101. You know, mass times acceleration is going to produce a lot more force. And I do think that play has a lot to it, talking specifically about a kickoff. And so it has required us maybe to look at something a little bit differently in terms of that aspect of the game.
No, the one thing that Dan, 40 years of being of coaching, 38, like I said, 38 to 40 years. I mean, the first 20 years, a kid would, in high school football, would play the game, and you would semi-lift. You might lift a day a week. Sometimes you might lift 2 days a week. But then when the season's over with, there was a period of time. Now, we're talking in the early 80s, in the mid-80s, into the 90s. Some kids didn't get back in the weight room until either right before spring practice, because they were playing multiple sports, or teams didn't have great off-season programs, or whatever. And then they would come out, especially young kids, especially 8th and 9th graders. Now, I know over the last 20 years, and my last two stops, our kids, we started an off-season program with our young kids where we were lifting 4 days a week, even during the season, with our 8th and 9th graders, and some selected 10th graders, and it was called developmental program. So what's happening is now these kids, as Coach said, have gotten stronger. They're faster. They're more physical. And he's exactly, I don't think the tendon or the ligament or those joint areas, you know, they're still very vulnerable. But I know, like Coach Calhoun said, these kids now, and here's another thing. As I sit here in Birmingham, Alabama today, you can go, my former quarterback that won it for us here in 2000 has a very successful workout called RPM here in Birmingham, Lance Rhodes. He's making a really good living, and there's a several workout places here in Birmingham. So these kids now can get what they get at school, and then when they leave, if they're not a dual sport athlete, they go and work out to these specialized trainers in Atlanta, here in Birmingham, everywhere. So kids are getting worked out year-round now. So the kids are way better, a lot more physical, a lot stronger. And so, but I'll say this too, I tell you what I've noticed too, Coach Calhoun, this year, is I watched a lot more pro football. I got the NFL ticket this year for the first time ever. So I sit and watch a lot of pro football also. And the two teams have not changed, the Patriots and the Seahawks. To me, to this day, are still two of the better tackling teams. And technique fundamentally are very, very sound in pro football. And I think if we had Coach Graham on, Ty Graham on last week or 2 weeks ago, and he talked about going to New England and watching OTAs and their training camps and all that. It's just the fundamentals of the game. Those two programs teach the fundamentals extremely well, and you can tell it on Sundays.
Oh, no doubt. Yes, sir. And I think probably that one of the things that probably an indicator to which Coach just referenced, these guys being bigger, they're a little more conscious of what they eat, I think, in this day and age than they were 20 years ago. And then, like you said, I mean, the amount of work they do, whether it's back squatting and power cleans, the lower bodies are different now. They are. You look just at the back of their rump and their legs. These are different. They're just playing with different power, a different base. And, you know, I look at an injury like a Liz Frank injury, a foot injury. It's like Coach said. I mean, your bones and your tendons can only carry so much. And I think by and large, if you took on the average, I bet football players carry about 15, 17 more pounds than what they did in the year 2000.
There's no question. And I can say it either because I have a 28-year-old son who played for me back in 2007, 8, 9. I have a son right now that's 15. And they argue all the time about, well, we work harder than y'all did. Well, and what I tell my oldest son, now the work's about the same, but here's the difference I see. And you said it just a minute ago. My 15-year-old is way more conscious about nutrition, what he's eating and how he's eating, and what he's putting in his body on a day. I mean, he eats six times a day. He's putting the right things in his body. Where my 28-year-old son may have been, he worked hard and he pushed hard, but he may have stopped at McDonald's and got two Big Macs too. So I think that, and I don't think my 15-year-old son has ever eaten a Big Mac. So there is a huge difference in nutritional information now. And I think that's a big part of it, too. I just really believe that specialized trainers, nutrition, and strength and conditioning programs are so much different now than they were even 10 years ago.
Well, have you made any changes since 2007, your first year there at the academy, Coach Calhoun, maybe with the strength and conditioning program?
Oh, no question. I mean, I think you look especially like Coach referenced, how we feeding them, how they snacking. I think you always emphasize hydration. But really, you think back 15 years ago, you thought, hey, you just eat three good meals and you'll be good to go.
Yep.
Or you realize throughout the entire day, what kind of proteins are you putting in your body? What kind of greens are you putting in your body? The electrolytes. I mean, being a little more, it is a little more scientific in that regard. You know, the catapult system, just in terms of activity, you know, the balance of how many calories you're burning, and probably even more so how precise you are for each kid, because each kid's got to be different. Where maybe it was a kind of little bit of one size fits all, you know, 25 years ago. So absolutely, you know, you have nutritionists. We have one here, which you never would have thought of. And I mean, goodness, I mean, I don't know if 30 years ago you thought, hey, so what if I ate a lean piece of chicken and a bunch of broccoli compared to if I'm a Mountain Dew and a Snickers? Is there really a difference? Now you know there is.
Yep, there is. And you're right, Coach. You're exactly right. I think that, you know, the old red, green, and yellow philosophy with each kid with caloric intake. But here's something that's changed too, Dan, is that, like Coach said, even 10 years ago, well, maybe 12 years ago, so we've done it for 10 years, pretty solid. But so let's say 10 years ago, you go to a ball game and you're playing, okay? So you eat your pregame meal, you're four hours away. Now we've learned through other sports that you eat closer to that event. So now we've cut it down and we were eating 3 hours prior to the event. And then here's something else we started doing. I think it's really helped us. Is we started feeding our kids that 2 hours that you're at the stadium, what we put in their body 2 hours to game time and at halftime. And I'm talking about food. I'm not talking about just hydration. There would be food that our players would eat that we scientifically studied, and that we would go in there and our kids would eat at halftime. And I'm not talking about a five-course meal. I'm talking about maybe a peanut butter jelly sandwich. We're talking about a protein bar, all kinds of types of fruit, not citrus, but types of fruit, things of that neighborhood that we would eat through pregame, but after warm-ups, when they got through with warm-ups at 30 minutes before kickoff and at halftime, leading up to, and here's where we saw it. look, I'm a big tennis fan. So you look at the U.S. Open, you look at Wimbledon, you look at the French Open, whatever. They're in a 4.5-hour grueling match, and you watch that tennis player over eating a whole banana. He's eating a protein bar or two. He's constantly eating, and he's constantly putting a mixture of fluid in his body, and it's even more so as the match goes on.
Well, you see that in golf also.
Yeah, sure.
You see Tiger Woods, a lot of golfers also.
You're right. Great point, Dan. Absolutely.
But I just think it's so important now. Like Coach said, I bet your training's changed. I know ours has. You know, we built a weight room in Colquitt that I've not seen, and because of how we train with all the movement stuff we do in between sets and reps that we're doing now. So the old mat drill stuff, Coach, that we used to do starting in February after signing day or in high school, the four-quarter stuff, we're doing that year-round now every workout. So our kids stay at a peak of condition year-round where they don't fall off that valley and have to climb back up to get in that great condition.
Yes, sir. Yeah, absolutely.
So are y'all doing that? Are you doing that in your strength and conditioning deal? Are y'all – so I guess what I'm saying there, what's changed in 5 years between strength and conditioning?
Well, I think you referenced certainly the nutritional aspect of it for sure. But what we try to do is we're balancing some kind of power lift with a core development with some kind of stretch and movement. And we have three different stations that you rotate amongst those three stations. One of them's on a platform. One of them is, on flat ground. I mentioned the core part of it. And then another one, it may be on a dumbbell platform. I mean, just, you have to build power, but you can't be stiff. So you got to keep developing flexibility. And then the other part of it is just change of direction. And it truly is year round. I mean, the days of seeing guys playing two sports, unfortunately, at the college level, I've about been gone, which hurts you a little bit because I have a kid that plays football and basketball. He's a senior in high school, and I've told him all along, big fella, you play as many sports as you want because it's so good for you, and if you really, really do have that ability down the road, it'll dial into one sport. But, for parents, golly, I mean, I'm such a big believer in playing multiple sports. I mean, there's more upside that a kid has. I think the situational awareness, and most importantly, just the interpersonal skills that you develop by having to interact with other people and how healthy that is. But, golly, it does make it appealing in this day and age for a kid that's 16 or 17 to say, no way, I'm going to play one sport and I'm going to do everything I can to develop that way. If you're a basketball player, how many shots can I get up every single day to help extend my range as a three-point shooter? If I'm a volleyball player, and how well I can, spike or serve, and same thing goes for football players. How much power can I build, especially if I butt my legs?
I think the other thing too, Dan, is that I'm like Coach Cone. I believe that the multi-sport athlete always have. And my hat goes off to any player in high school. And I just had this conversation with my son 2 days ago about, because he's a football baseball player, and he kept saying, Dad, I don't know if I'm going to play baseball. I really love it, but I want to get better as a football player. So he's a ninth grader. I'm having that conversation with him. I don't know that I've had that conversation with my 28-year-old. So I think when you look at it, though, I think that it's important. But my hat does, and I told him this. I said, Thomas, what does make it important to me for you? If you can balance the two sports and then still train properly, now, is that going to require a lot more effort on your part to get your academics, to get your proper nutrition, proper training, strength and conditioning, and play multiple sports? Do that as long as you can. Now, it may cut into your social life, but you got the rest of your life to be social. And so I'm having those conversations, and it seems like to me, this is just me, it's way more in depth with my 15-year-old than it was with my 28-year-old when he was 15. So it's just different, completely different.
Well, Coach Calhoun, we're about up on time here, but on the way out, Just want to ask you about the trip to Hawaii, October 19th. That's coming up. Is that usually a short week? Obviously, you got to make that trip over. How do you treat a week like that? Do you get out there and maybe spend a day of practice time doing walkthrough stuff at the Aloha Stadium or high school or anything?
Yeah, what we try to do is this, Dan. We actually, I like to keep your practice schedule as close as you're able to. I mean, just golly, to have all your guys, whenever you travel to a game, now you're taking a much smaller roster. I think it compromises the quality of practice that you have if you got to do it somewhere else. And so we'll practice early Thursday afternoon and then leave. Probably flight will take off around 3 o'clock or so on Thursday afternoon, and being able to gain a good number of hours, we'll land out in Hawaii around 7 o'clock Hawaii, twice standard time. And so that's going to be our approach. Now, obviously, the trip back will be a doozy. When you roll back here to Colorado, you'll take off on a Saturday and land while there's plenty of sunlight that's already been out on Sunday afternoon or Sunday around noon.
My question to that, Coach, because Dan stole my question. That's pretty good, Dan. That's great. But, I mean, so how do you handle the back end of it, Coach? Are you open the next week, or do you play the next week?
We're not. We play Utah State, a really, really good football
team. Yes.
And, you know, we're just going to have to bounce back on our feet. Yet at the same time, I don't know if it's that much different than it would be if you were playing on a Saturday afternoon and then you played Friday evening, which we did a few weeks ago with Boise State. So, you know, you just got to be a little bit in tune in terms of, you know, what you're asking your guys do and make sure they have the proper recovery. Yet at the same time, still to make sure we're completely prepared for the next one.
Do you think, my last question, do you think it's important? Because I'm, you know, I just lost the state championship game because I thought we did not prepare well. We were by far the best team in the state of Georgia, and we lost. We went 14-1. But we played on a Friday and didn't play again until the following Wednesday, so it was like 11 days, 10 days, whatever it was. Don't think I handled it very well. So I guess the question I have for you was, because I'm trying to learn, is do you think it's important for the body, as much for the mind as it is for the physical side of it, to completely take a day off from the game of football once you play the game? Do you give your kids a complete day off, or what is their downtime or recovery time?
Yeah, we do, Coach. We don't do anything on a Sunday in a normal week. And I agree wholeheartedly. You know, goodness, I mean, I think they need a day a little bit just to kind of recoup. The other aspect of it here at the Air Force Academy, I think they need that time academically. And probably the other part of the equation is our guys, because we recruit nationally, the one time zone we have very, very few kids from happens to be this one, the Mountain time zone. And so their families a lot of time are in town for a weekend game, and that's the one time they're able to see them. And I do, Coach, yes, sir, especially for the players. Now, the coaches are a different deal,
but
for the players. Absolutely. Now, you hope on that day that they do have off. Can you take 7-8 minutes and stretch? Can you maybe get in a cold tub? Just a little bit in that regard, but they have to, you know, just the intensity and the way you approach football. You got to know. I don't know if it's realistic to do it every single day. I just don't think the body and the mind. I don't care who you are and how much of a Spartan atmosphere you may have. There's got to be a little bit of recovery that's involved.
Right. No, I think you're exactly right. Well, I appreciate that, Coach, and I've enjoyed our talk today. It's been refreshing, and again, I've got the utmost respect for the Air Force Academy, but I've got a lot of respect for you, Coach Cowan.
Well, appreciate that. And I can tell you, Coach, in every regard, I feel the same way. You've done a remarkable job, and the incredible impact you've had on young kids, too.
Thanks, Coach.
Well, Coach Calhoun, thank you for coming on the show. It's always good to catch up with you.
You bet. You the same, Dan, and you take care and enjoy Knoxville.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.